Murdoch stood on his porch with his hands on his hips, Vasquez standing next to him, looking at the group of men gathered in front of him. Curly Rogers had just come back from finding One-Eyed Jackson and his men's dead bodies by the riverbed. Sandy Billings, the member of the group who had run away, told him where the fracas took place.
They're all dead, Mr. Murdoch. Weren't no other bodies around, though there was some blood. Might have been from the old man who attacked him.
We have Jensen and his men outnumbered 3 or 4 to 1. Any man who's afraid to ride against those odds, I've no use for. If you want to quit, turn in your resignation to Vasquez right now.
No one moved to take advantage of his offer.
Okay, then. Load up your weapons and feed and water your horses. We ride against Jensen in an hour.
As the men dispersed, the man named Colonel Waters rode up to where Murdoch and Vasquez sat their horses.
Murdoch, I intend to kill Joey Wells personally. He was responsible for the death of over 150 of my men after the war.
So, senor, what you tell us this for?
Just to let you know what I intend to do. I don't care overly much about the others you're fighting. My attention is going to be on killing Joey Wells.
That's fine with me, Colonel. But you're going to have to get through the others to get to Wells, so take your best shot.
The man in the Union coat tipped his officer's hat and rode off to join the rest of the gun hawks as they gathered in front of the corral. Vasquez glanced at Murdoch and tapped his head.
Sheesh, es muy loco.
I don't care if he's crazy, as long as he can fire a pistol and don't turn tail and run when the fighting starts.
Murdoch spurred his horse to the front of his group of men.
Let's ride, men!
Murdoch wheeled his mount and rode off toward the rocking sea. Over 50 of the toughest, meanest gunnies from several states followed. Smoke Jensen stepped out of the door of the cabin to talk to the men they had hired in Pueblo, who were waiting outside for instructions.
Boys, there's trouble riding our way. Unless I'm mistaken, Jacob Murdoch has hired a bunch of professional gunfighters and outlaws to ride for his brand. They're on their way here to kill us so Murdoch can have this land and set up his empire in Colorado. If that happens, he'll next take over the town of Pueblo and will again install his own man as sheriff. Do you want that to happen? But are you willing to die to keep Murdoch from having his way?
The men stared back at Smoke without flinching, just nodding their heads, their eyes filled with determination.
Thank you, men. Your sheriff, Ben Tolson, along with Joey Wells and Monty Carson and Cal and Pearly and me, are not going to let that happen either. We intend to stand alongside you and fight until Murdoch and his men are all dead, or we are!
Lewis and the others on the porch with Smoke stepped forward to stand next to him.
I'm going to let Joey Wells, who's been working with you men for the past few days, assign you your places in the upcoming battle. He knows your strengths and your weaknesses, and he's going to put you where you can do the most good.
You, Sammy, Joel, Tuck, and Benny, you and your men who've been punching the cattle, I want you in the cabin here. Get your shotguns and rifles and get upstairs on the roof. I want every window and door double covered. You got a clear field of fire for 150 yards, so open them windows and get yourselves comfy. You may be there a while. Remember what I told you about them guns. You take your time and aim. Fire only when you got a good shot. We don't have a surplus of ammunition, so use what you have to good advantage. Mike, Jimmy, Todd, and Josh, I want you to set up in that copse of trees over yonder to the right. And we already got you some holes dug there, and there's a couple of fallen logs to get behind. You and your men who are the best with rifles, you're going to be a bit farther from the action. I want you all to wait until Murdoch and his gang are even with or maybe a bit past you before you start to fire on them. Let them get good and close. Then they'll be trapped with you and the men in the house. Now, Tyler, you and Billy Joe and Tommy are my shotgun brigade. I want you each carrying a sack or two of shells, and I want you to get out there in that mess of boulders yonder. We done got you some logs and brush and such around some natural holes and caves in the rocks to get in and get out of the way if the lead starts to get too thick. You men are to stay hidden until Murdoch's riders get by you. Then we'll have them boxed in between the house, the trees, and the boulders. Now, remember what I said about our little surprises for the gunnies. And don't none of you fall into any of those traps, you hear?
Joey looked at Tolson.
Ben, With your experience with that greener, I'd like you to stay on the first floor of the cabin to make sure none of the gunnies get close enough to set fire to it or get inside. Okay?
You bet, Joey. I'll guarantee won't none of those bastards get through the door unless it's over my dead body.
Good. Now, Monty, I need you to get the upper story of the cabin and keep those punchers calm up there. Ain't none of them able to hit nothing with a gun, so I need someone to show them how to do it and protect him if worse comes to worse.
Monty nodded, his eyes hard as flint. Joey glanced at Smoke.
These men are gonna do you proud, Smoke. I'll see to it.
After everyone else had gone to their assigned positions, Joey looked at Cal and Pearly and Lewis and Smoke.
That leaves just us, men. What'll it be?
I think we get to be the cavalry, boys. If we get on our mounts and wait just over that rise over there until we hear gunfire, then we can swoop down in among the gunhawks and do a powerful lot of damage at close range.
Lewis nodded, as did Cal and Pearly.
I've been fighting on horseback for so many years, I don't rightly know no other way. I'll be riding with the Jensen cavalry, if you boys don't mind a rebel yell now and again.
I rode with the Gray during the war too, Joey. And I may just join you in the yelling.
I knew you was a man after my own heart, Smoke. Cal, Pearly, if you boys want to help, you can go out there and pour a little kerosene on our piles of wood. If they come at us after dark, we'll light the wood piles so we can see where our surprises are buried.
Woo! I can't hardly wait to see them boys' eyes when they come busting in here loaded for bear. Yes, sir, that's gonna be a sight to see.
Joey walked over and put his arm around Pearly's shoulder.
Boys, I've grown right fond of the two of you. If either one of you get yourself killed tonight, I'm gonna be right pissed off, you hear?
Yes, sir. I'll keep that in mind. And I want you to know, I'll watch after Cal and make him keep his fool head down.
You do that, Pearly. And don't you forget to keep yours down, too.
Yes, sir, Smoke.
Pearly and Cal sauntered off, and Smoke was left alone on the porch with Lewis Longmont, Monty Carson, and Joey Wells. He pulled his Colts out and checked his loads as he spoke.
Well, gentlemen, friends, I guess it's about time we find out what we're made of.
Those boys we hired will stand firm, Smoke. I can tell you that.
I know, Joy. They're a fine bunch of men.
Smoke holstered his pistols and looked at his friends. Lewis smiled.
I'm going to enjoy riding with you and Joey. Hell, I may have kids someday. And I'll not miss a chance to tell him I once rode and did battle with the famous Smoke Jensen and the infamous Joey Wells.
Then let's shag our mounts, boys. I want to get a little ways away from this ranch house so we can ride and attack without getting shot by our own men.
They waited while Cal and Pearly mounted up, and then they rode toward Murdoch's ranch at an easy trot. Smoke had Colts on both legs, a Henry repeating rifle in one saddle boot, and a greener 10-gauge scatter gun in the other. Lewis rode with one pistol in a holster on his right leg and had two sawed-off American Arms 12-gauges in saddle boots on either side of his saddle horn. The two-shot Derringer behind his belt was going to be useful only in very close quarters. Joey had his Colt in his right-hand holster, his 36 caliber in his shoulder holster, and two short-barreled Winchester rifles, one in a saddle boot and one he carried across his saddle horn. Cal had the twin Colt and Navy 36 caliber pistol Smoke had given him that he used while riding with Preacher. He also carried a Henry repeating rifle slung over his shoulder on a rawhide strap. Pearly had double-rigged Colt Army 44s and a greener 12-gauge shotgun with a cut-down barrel for close-in work.
Hell, boys, if Lead had this much firepower at Appomattox, he wouldn't have had to surrender.
An hour before sunset, the riders from the Lazy M came galloping towards Smoke Spread like an invading army of wild men. Smoke, Joey, Lewis, Cal, and Pearly were bent low over their saddle horns behind a small rise in a group of pine trees, waiting for them to pass.
I guess those assholes are trying to scare us to death with all that yelping like engines.
Don't worry none, Cal. We're gonna teach these galoots a lesson they'll never forget.
Cal nodded, relaxing a little bit, knowing that he was among friends who would fight with him side by side against the devil himself if necessary. When Smoke heard gunfire being returned from the area of the cabin, he put his reins in his teeth took his greener 10-gauge in his left hand and his Colt 44 in his right, and spurred horse forward. Murdoch's men were in the trap smoke and divides for him, caught with the shotgun brigade hidden among boulders at their rear, and off to their left, hidden in the setting sun, the men with rifles, and to the front the cabin with its contingent of men who, though not accurate with their weapons, were pouring lead into the outlaws at a furious rate, hitting some by mere chance. Cal and Pearlie had scattered a series of 20 small piles of kerosene-soaked wood across the clearing where Murdoch's men were trapped, and those were now lighted, making the area look like an army camp with its campfires. Just before Smoke and his band arrived from the bandit's right side, completing their boxing-in maneuver, Monte Carson, leaning out of an upstairs window, did as he had been instructed. He began to fire his Henry repeating rifle fitted with a four-power scope at the base of the small fires. The wood had been piled by Cal and Pearlie over cans of black powder and put in burlap sacks with horseshoe nails packed around it. Other traps began to become effective. Several trenches had been dug with sharpened spikes stuck in the box. Curly Rogers and his group of bounty hunters were directly behind Vasquez and Murdoch as they approached the cabin. Rogers was firing his Colt at the ranch house as he and his men passed a pile of boulders. Suddenly, Curly was blown out of his saddle, three buckshot pellets in his side. He bounced and quickly scrambled to his feet, barely managing to avoid being trampled by his fellow outlaws. Rogers clamped his left arm to his side, pulled out another gun, and ran toward the cabin, hoping to find another horse to get on. His feet went right through one of the deadfalls, and his legs fell onto two sharpened spikes. As he flopped on the ground, wooden stakes impaled in his legs, a bullet from the cabin aimed at another rider missed its intended target, but it didn't miss Curly. Gates, seeing the amount of resistance at the ranch, tried to veer his horse off to the left and escape. As he passed between two pine trees, the baling wire Cal had strung 9 feet off the ground caught him just under the chin. Horse and rider rode on, but Gates' head stayed behind to fall on the ground like overripe fruit. The half-breed, Sam Silverwolf and Jed Beartooth, trying to escape the fire from the cabin in the trees, whirled their horses and headed for the boulders, intended to take cover there among the rocks. Tyler and Billy Joe, leaders of the shotgun brigade, saw them coming, and they stepped into the open, guns leveled. Juan Jimenez was jumping his horse over one of the small fires when Monty fired into it. The Silverado Kid, Blackie Benson, and Jerry Lindy were riding next to each other. When the Kid realized the trap they were in, he motioned to his men to pull their mounts to the left. The three men rode hard at the trees, guns blazing, lying low over saddle horns. Mike and Jimmy were lying behind a log, their Henrys resting on it as they fired. The Kid jerked his reins to the side and pulled his horse's head around to head back into the melee around the cabin. He'd had enough of this damn rifle brigade. Explosions were coming one on top of another. Billowing clouds of gunpowder and cordite hung over the area like ground fog on a winter morning. Into this hell rode Smoke Jensen and his friends. Soon, all five men charging the murderers and bandits were firing shotguns and pistols and rifles into the crowd as they closed ranks with them. The mass of men broke and splintered as Smoke and Joey and Lewis and Cal and Pearlie cut a swath of death through it with their blazing firepower and raw courage. Smoke saw Horton and Mac shooting at the cabin from horseback, while Gooden, Boots, and Art South were nearby on foot, their bronze lying dead at their feet, pierced by hundreds of horseshoe nails.
Remember them, Lewis!
Damn right!
Lewis had been one of the men who rode up into the mountains to stand with Smoke against the bounty hunters in the Lee Slater fracas. Lewis bared his teeth in a wide grin.
Let's do it!
He rode hard and fast at the killers with Smoke at his side. Horton was the first to go down. Smoke's Colt clicked on empty and he holstered it, pulling his greener one-handed. The load of buckshot nailheads met Max head-on. The lead exploded his body into dozens of pieces, scattering blood and meat over a 10-square-yard area. Smoke stuffed the greener in his saddle boot and pulled his left-hand Colt mount. He began to alternate, firing right, then left, then right again, as he continued his charge over Max's body towards Gooden, Boots, and Art Sal. Gooden shot at Lewis and hit home, the slug tearing into the gambler's left thigh and missing the big artery there. Lewis returned the favor. Art Sal fired at Lewis and missed, but nailed his horse in the right shoulder. Lewis rolled and sprang to his feet, left hand pushing his wounded left leg to keep him upright. Art South stepped closer to Lewis and extended his hand, pointing his Colt between Lewis's eyes, a triumphant grin on his face. Before Art South could react, Lewis pulled his Derringer out from behind his belt and shot both 44 barrels into South's chest. Boots swung his pistol toward the now unarmed and defenseless Lewis, who merely stared unflinchingly back at the outlaw. Boots' lips curled up in a snarl until they completely disappeared into the hole Smoke blew in his face with his 44s. Smoke grabbed the reins of a riderless horse while Lewis bent and picked up the Colt he had dropped. Smoke reached down and picked Lewis up with one arm and swung him into the saddle.
Thanks, partner.
Smoke just smiled and rode off, looking for other prey. Cal and Pearly had emptied their guns and were reloading, trying to keep their mounts from shying while they punched out empty brass casing and stuffed in new ones. The Silverado Kid galloped over to where Bill Denver and Slim Watkins were riding, firing up into the cap. Bill Denver shot into the second-story window, and his slug took Monte Carson in the side of the head and took out a chunk of his scalp as it knocked him unconscious and blew him back out of sight. The Kid pointed toward Cal and Pearly off to the side of the fracas, surrounded by the gunnies they'd killed, and then he charged forward. Denver and Watkins nodded and wheeled their mounts to follow the Kid's lead.
Look out, Pearly! Here they come!
With no time to reload his pistols, Cal dropped him and swung the heavy repeating rifle off his back. Pearly holstered his still-empty pistols and shucked his greener 12-gauge with the cut-down barrel from his saddle boot. The Silverado Kid, scourge and killer of women and children, the man too tough for Tombstone, took three 44 caliber slugs from Cal's rifle. Denver and Watkins got off four shots with their pistols. The first shot took Cal in the right hip above the joint, and it knocked him out of the sack. The next shot missed, but the third and fourth both hit Pearly. One burning a groove along his neck, and the other skimming his belly, tearing a chunk of fat off, but not hitting meat. Pearly straightened up and let both his hammers down. Both men were dead before they hit the ground. Pearly jumped out of his saddle and sat cradling Cal's unconscious body in his arms while he reloaded his pistols. No one else was going to hurt his friend as long as he was alive to prevent it. Jerry Jackson, train robber from Kansas, rode his horse at the cabin. Blaze and torch in one hand and Colt in the other, Ben Tolson stepped out of his doorway and onto the porch, his shotgun held high. Jackson was blown off his mount at the same time his 44 slug tore into Tolson's chest on the right side, spinning him around and back through the door he gave his life to defend. Joey, his pistols and both Winchester rifles empty, stood up in his stirrups, looking for Cal and Pearly. He wanted to make sure they were all right.
There you are, you bastard!
Pearly looked over his shoulder to see Colonel Waters riding at him, his sword held high above his head, blood streaming from a wound in his left shoulder.
Wells, prepare to die!
Joey bared his teeth and pulled his Arkansas toothpick from its scabbard. He wheeled red around and dug his spurs in. They passed each other, the sword flashing towards Joey's head. He ducked and parried with his long knife, deflecting Waters' blade. Both horses turned again and raced towards each other. At the last minute, Joey nudged Red with his legs, and the huge animal veered directly into Water's smaller one, knocking both horse and rider to the ground. Joey swung his leg over the horn and bounded out of the saddle. He crouched, Arkansas toothpick held waist high in front of him, and waited for Waters to get on his feet.
Oh, you killed my men, everyone, Wells, and now you are going to die.
Your men like you, Waters, were cowards who killed defenseless boys who'd given up their guns. They didn't deserve to live, and neither do you. Come and taste my steel, coward.
Waters lunged, his sword outstretched. Joey leaned to his right, taking the point of the sword in his left shoulder, while striking underhanded at Waters. Joey's blade drove into Waters' gut just under his ribs and angled upward to pierce the officer's heart. The two men, gladiators from a war long past, just stood there, chest to chest for a moment, until the light and hatred faded from Waters' eyes, and he fell dead before the last of the Missouri volunteers. Meanwhile, Murdoch saw they were losing the battle.
Emilio, let's get out of here!
The two men who had managed to stay on the periphery of the gunfight wheeled their horses and galloped back toward the Lazy M. They were able to escape Smoke's trap only because of the heavy layer of smoke and dust in the air. By the time the men in the boulder saw them coming, they were out of range of their shotguns. The fracas lasted another 20 minutes before all the gunnies were either dead or wounded badly enough to be out of commission. It was full dark by now, and the punchers in the cabin lighted torches and joined with men from the trees and boulders, beginning to gather their wounded and dead. The injured who worked for Smoke were brought into the cabin and were attended to by Andre and the others. Their gunshot wounds were cleaned and dressed, and they were given hot soup and coffee, and for those in pain, whiskey. Smoke bent over Monty Carson, checking his bandages to make sure they were tight. Carson drifted in and out of consciousness, but Smoke was sure he would survive. Andre fussed over Lewis's leg wound, cleaning and re-cleaning it.
Just put a dressing on it, Andre. There's others here who need you more than I do.
Smoke glanced at Lewis, a worried look on his face.
Have you seen Cal or Pearlie or Joey, Lewis?
Aren't they here?
No.
Lewis struggled to his feet, using a rifle as a cane.
Let's go. They may be lying out there wounded, or worse.
The two men walked among the dead and dying outlaws as they looked for their friends. The outlaws deserved no mercy. They had taken money to kill others and would now have to face the consequences of their actions. A harsh judgment, but a just one. Finally, Smoke spied the horse Pearlie had been riding, standing over near a small creek that ran off to the side of the cabin. He ran toward the animal, praying he would find the young men alive. He stopped short of what he saw. Joey, his left shoulder wrapped in his blood-stained shirt, was trying to dress Pearlie's neck and stomach wounds, but Pearlie wouldn't let go of Cal to give him access. The young cowboy had one hand holding his wadded-up shirt against a hole in Cal's flank to stop the bleeding, while he held his Colt in the other, hammer back, protecting his young friend from anyone else who might try to harm him.
Come on, Pearlie. Fight's over. Let me take care of where you got shot. Then we can get Cal over to the cabin for treatment.
I'm not moving here till I see Smoke. I promised him I was gonna watch over Cal, and I aim to do just that.
Would you look at that, Lewis? Like a mother hen with her chick.
If I ever find a woman who will take care of me like that, I'll give up gambling and settle down.
Pearlie, you've done a good job. Now let Joey fix you up while I take Cal to the cabin so Andre can patch his wounds.
Pearlie lifted fatigue-ridden eyes to stare at Smoke.
Smoke, you got him?
Smoke lifted Cal in his arms.
Yeah, Pearlie, I got him.
Good.
Pearlie passed out. The next morning, After the doctor from Pueblo had been summoned and he had come to the cabin to do what he could, Smoke and his friends sat around a campfire outside, the cabin being used to house the wounded.
Well, we didn't do near as bad as I feared. We lost 7 good men, and another 8'll be a long time recovering. I'm damn sorry to lose Ben Tolson. He was a fine man, one any man would be proud to call partner.
He'd do to ride the river with.
If it's all right with you and the others, I'd like to give his widow a share of the rockin' sea. He earned it.
He damn sure did. From what I'm told, if he hadn't stopped that last rider, he would have burned the entire cabin down and all the men with it.
Cal was lying on a makeshift cot before the fire, spooning down some of Andre's beef stew as fast as he could. He cut his eyes over to look at the bandage around Pearlie's gut. Though thin as a rail, Pearlie was a famous chow hound, being known to eat everything that wasn't tied down.
Pearlie, did I hear the doctor correct when he said that if you didn't have that layer of fat around your middle, you would have had a serious wound?
Yeah. So?
So I guess you can thank Miss Sally for saving your life. What with all that bear sign she makes that you scarf down, I guess no one will kid you anymore about that gut around your middle.
What gut? I don't have no gut. If you didn't have this unnatural affection for lead, neither one of us would have gotten shot.
Smoke, I checked all the bodies, and I don't see no sign of Murdoch nor of Vasquez.
I know. One of the boys you assigned to the boulders, Billy Joe, I think it was, said right at the end a couple of riders got past him, headed back toward Murdoch's place.
Joey struggled to his feet, unable to use his left arm because of the sling the doctor had put on it.
Well, no need to waste any time. I'm going after him before they have time to split.
Smoke got up and brushed dirt off the seat of his pants.
I'm coming too. I got a score to settle for Puma Buck.
As the others started to rise, Smoke held out his hand.
No, boys. Joey and I started this alone, and we're going to finish it alone. Thanks for the offer, but this trail is ours, and we have to ride it all the way to the end.
Smoke walked over to talk to Lewis, while one of the uninjured hands threw a saddle on Red and Horse.
Lewis, there's something I want you to do for me while we're over at Murdoch settling things.
Anything, Smoke. As long as it doesn't include dancing. I'm not too spry on my feet just yet.
Oh, I think you will enjoy this little errand. You can even take that buckboard with a pillow for your leg if need be.
Oh?
Yes. I'd like you to ride into Pueblo and pick something up for me. I had Ben send a wire to Big Rock last time we were in town, and the package ought to have arrived on today's train.
I hope this package is what I think it is.
Shotgun Sam Willoughby and Gimpy Monroe were stuffing their faces and filling their guts at the hotel dining room in Pueblo, with their horses packed and loaded outside for the long ride back to New Mexico. Two pretty young blonde women, accompanied by a small boy, walked into the hotel. As they sat down at a table across the room and ordered lunch, Shotgun Sam glanced around. They were the only patrons since the dining hour had passed already.
Hey, Gimpy, what say we stroll over there and say howdy? We might get lucky and knock off a piece or two of that fine-looking woman flesh.
You randy old coot, Shotgun. Man of your age ought not be thinking about his dick all the time.
What do we got to lose? The sheriff's out there shooting it up with Murdoch and his gang. Who's to stop us from whatever we want to do?
You're right. He is right purdy at that.
And we gonna be a long time on the trail before we get another chance like this. Let's do it.
Shotgun Sam stood, picked up the greener he was never without, hitched his belt over his fat gut, and swaggered over to the table where the lady sat. Gimpy joined him. A pair of outlaws stood a few feet in front of their table, hands on hips.
Howdy, ladies. My partner and me was wondering if you'd maybe like to come up to our room and have a little drink of whiskey with us?
Sally Jensen glanced up at the men, and then she smiled, her beauty striking in the afternoon sunlight from the window.
I don't think so, cowboy. We're married ladies in town to meet our husbands.
Oh, I don't see no menfolk here. Seems a man shouldn't ought to neglect pretty girls like you two.
Betty Wells, who had grown up around men like these, was less refined and gracious than Sally.
Get lost, white trash, before my husband comes in here and makes you wish you'd never been born.
Sally raised her napkin to her face to hide her smile at Betty's earthy way of talking.
Don't you get uppity with me, bitch. Now I asked you nice. Now I'm telling you. Get your sweet ass up and come with me. I'll have to scatter you all over this room.
Sally leaned back in her chair then, a small smile curling the corners of her lips. She looked at Betty and winked where the men couldn't see it.
Sure, mister. Is it okay if we powder our noses first?
Oh, you can powder anything you want, so long as you hurry it up.
Sally nodded at Betty and glanced at their purses sitting on the floor.
Why don't you get your powder out, Betty, for these nice gentlemen?
That's a right good idea, Sally.
The ladies picked up their purses and laid them on the table in front of them. They snapped open the clasps and put their hands inside at the same time. With beautiful, sexy smiles, both Betty and Sally looked up at Shotgun and Gimpy and pulled the triggers on the short-barreled pistols both of them carried.
Well, that was fun. Now, I don't know about you, but I sure do have a sweet tooth that needs attending to.
Well, I couldn't agree more, Sally. Little Tom has been waiting all day for some cake.
Smoke put a hand on Joey's arm and helped him climb up on Red. Then he stepped into the saddle on horse. They rode off toward the Lazy M, and Murdoch and Vasquez had an easy canter. After a few miles, Smoke noticed fresh blood on Joey's shoulder and a tight grimace of pain on his lips.
Is this ride too much for your wound, Joey? If it is, we can go back and wait a few days for the wound the doc stitched to knit together.
I want to end this business, Smoke. Well, my life, it seems I've been living with hate. First during the war, and then after when I was chasing Redlegs. The only time I've been at peace was with Betty. And then when little Tom came, I thought my life was complete. And all that anger was behind me. Since Vasquez and his men rode into my life, I've found all that hate and more back in my heart. And at first I thought I'd missed all the excitement of the chase and the killing. But I've found that the hate festers inside of you. I'm afraid if I don't get shut of it soon, I won't be fit to go back to Betty. She's just too fine a woman to have to live with a man all eat up inside with hate and bitterness.
I don't think you or Betty and Tom have to worry about that, Joey. You've just been doing what any man would do, fighting to protect your family and your home. When you see the end of Vasquez and Murdoch, things will go back like they were. The only hate I can see inside you is anger at the men who hurt your loved ones. And that's a good thing. A man who won't stand up for his family is no good.
You ought to be a preaching man, Smoke. You sure know the right things to say.
Well, that's a picture to think on. Smoke Jensen, holding Sunday revivals.
What are you going to do about the river once this is over, Smoke?
Oh, I think I'll leave that to the new ramrod of the Rocking Sea. It'll be his decision to make.
Another hour of easy riding brought him to the outskirts of the Lazy M. In the distance, they could see two horses tied up to a hitching rail near the corral, away from the house. Smoke pulled Puma Buck's Sharps 52 from his saddle boot and began to walk toward a group of trees about 100 yards from the house, keeping the trees between him and the house so Murdoch and Vasquez wouldn't be able to see him coming. Joey walked alongside him, carrying a Henry repeating rifle in his right hand, hammer thong loose on his Colt. Murdoch was in his study, down on hands and knees in front of his safe, shoveling wads of currency into a large leather valise. He and Vasquez had arrived back at his ranch at 3 a.m. and had taken a short nap, planning to leave the territory early the next morning. They slept longer than intended and were now hurrying to make up for lost time. Vasquez was sitting at Murdoch's desk, his feet up on the leather surface, a bottle of Murdoch's bourbon in one hand and one of his hand-rolled cigars in the other.
What do you do now, Señor Murdoch? Where do you go?
I plan to head up into Montana. There's still plenty of wild country up there, a place where a man with plenty of money and the right help can still carve out a good ranch.
And what about Emilio?
Murdoch noticed the way Vasquez was eyeing that money.
Just keep your hands where I can see them, Emilio. I was planning on taking you with me. I can always use a man like you. But now I'm not so sure that's a good idea. I don't want to have to sleep with one eye open all the way to Montana to keep you from killing me and taking my money.
Hey, boss, senor, you have nothing to fear from Emilio. I work for you, always.
Jesus!
Murdoch and Vasquez threw themselves on the floor behind his desk.
Murdoch! Vasquez! Come out with your hands up and go on living. At least until the people of Pueblo hang you.
What do you think?
That's not much choice, is it? I think I'd rather get shot than hang. You?
Maybe I can buy our way out.
Señor, you don't know this man very well. Jensen and Wells no one money. They want our blood.
Murdoch didn't believe Vasquez. Everyone wanted money. It was what made the world go round.
Jensen, Wells, I got $20,000 in here in cash. It's yours if you turn your backs and let us ride out of here.
I guess you're right.
Besides, after they kill us, they take the money anyway.
Murdoch scrambled on hands and knees to the wall where he took his Winchester 73 rifle down off a rack. He grabbed a Henry and pitched it across the room to Vasquez.
Here, let's start firing back. Maybe we'll get lucky.
Maybe horses learn to talk, but I do not think so.
They crawled across the floor and peeked out the window. They could see nothing.
God damn!
Murdoch rose and began to fire the Winchester as fast as he could work the lever and pull the trigger. He didn't bother to aim. He just poured a lot of lead out at the attackers.
Vasquez, see if you can sneak out the back and circle around them. Maybe you can get them from behind.
Okay, senor.
Vasquez crawled through the house, praying to a god he had almost forgotten existed that he would make it to his horse. He wasn't about to risk trying to sneak up on Jensen and Wells. If he got to his horse, he was going to be long gone before they knew it. He eased the back door open and stuck his head out. There was no one inside and no place to hide behind the cabin. Crouching low, Vasquez ran in a wide circle to where he and Murdoch had left their horses. He slipped between the rails on the far side of the corral and crawled on his belly across 30 yards of horse shit to get to his mount's reins. He reached up and untied the reins and stood up next to his bronc, his hand on the saddle horn, ready to leap into the saddle and be off.
Hello, El Machete.
Vasquez stiffened, and then he relaxed. The voice came from behind him. It was time to make his play. Maybe, like Murdoch said, he would get lucky. He grabbed iron and whirled. The bullet took the Mexican in the right shoulder. He fumbled for his gun with his left hand, but he couldn't get it out before Joey was standing over him.
Hey, it's over, Señor Wells. I surrender.
Joey's eyes were terrible for the Mexican to behold. They were black as the pits of hell and cold as those of a rattler ready to strike. Joey leaned down and pulled Vasquez's machete from its scabbard on his back.
I don't think so, Vasquez.
He held the blade up and twisted it so it gleamed and reflected sunlight on its razor-sharp edge.
In fact, guess what, El Machete?
No! No! Por favor, do not do this, señor.
Try as I might, Vasquez, I can't think of a single reason I shouldn't.
With a move like a rattler's strike, Joey slashed with the machete, severing Vasquez's right arm at the elbow.
Remember Mr. Williams, El Machete?
As Vasquez looked up through pain-clouded, terror-filled eyes, the machete flashed again, severing his left arm at the elbow. Joey stood and watched as Vasquez bled to death, remembering his wife and his son lying in their own blood because of this man. Smoke continued peppering the house with the sharp until one of the slugs tore open the pot-belly stove and set the house on fire. Flames consumed the wooden structure. Just before the roof caved in, Murdoch came running out of the door, his clothes smoldering and smoking, holding a leather valise in one hand and a Colt in the other, firing wildly. Smoke just stood there like he didn't care.
This is for Puma Buck.
Murdoch's head exploded, and he dropped where he stood, dead and in hell before he hit the ground. Smoke walked over and picked up the valise. He looked in it, smiled, and hooked the handles on his saddle horn. He helped Joey up on Red, then he climbed on horse, and they headed home.
What's in the valise?
I'll show you when we get back to the ranch.
As they approached the cabin, Smoke glanced at the corral to see if his package had arrived. It had. There were four Palouse mares prancing in there, running and kicking up their heels, glad to be off that train and out in the open air again. There was also a small paint pony, ready to be ridden. Joey, tired and weak from loss of blood, rode with his head down and didn't notice the new arrivals. Smoke helped Joey off Red.
Hello, the cabin! We got two hungry cowpokes here!
A petite blonde woman walked out on the porch. She had her arm around a boy about 3 or 4 years old who walked next to her, a wooden brace on his right leg.
Hungry cowpokes, are you? And how about your wives who were starved for a little affection from their men?
Joey's head jerked up, and his eyes lit up with happiness.
Betty! Tom!
Joey ran up the steps to the porch. All fatigue vanished, grinning like a madman. He threw his right arm around Betty and hugged her.
Oh, stop that, you big galoot. You're gonna break my neck.
Joey then knelt and hugged her little Tom, more gently this time.
Your leg. You're walking.
Betty stood next to Joey, running her hands through her man's hair as he knelt next to their son.
Doctor says the brace can come off in 2 weeks. He thinks the leg will be good as new by then.
And you?
I'm fine, dear. The wound healed without complications. But I don't know about you. Looks like you've been up to your old tricks again.
Joey stood and laid his head on Betty's shoulder.
It's over, Betty. The feud is over and done with.
And you're home for good. No more gallivanting around doing your man things.
No, dear. I'm home for good.
Hey, cowboy. Are you going to tell me hello? Or just stand there with your mouth open?
Smoke Jensen jumped like he'd been shot. He had been so happy to see the Wellses reunited, he plumb forgot that Sally had come to Pueblo with him. He ran up the stairs and swept her up in his arms and whirled her around. Later, around the dinner table, Smoke explained to Joey what he had done.
I had Ben Tolson send a wire to Sally to see if she could arrange for Betty and Tom to ride the train up here. I knew you wanted them to see the country and see what they thought of it.
You have a wonderful wife and son, Joey. We've become fast friends already.
I also had Sally bring up those Palouse mares we talked about for Red. It's time we carried on his bloodline, and I think they'd make a good cross.
What about that little paint pony out there? Surely you can't want to braid it to Red.
No, that's for Tom. Soon's the splints come off, it'll be time to put him on horseback, teach him to ride. That Indian paint will be perfect to learn on, small and gentle until he's ready for more.
Smoke, I don't know what to say. You've done so much.
Yeah, don't say anything just yet. Take some time. Show your family the country. If they and you like it up here like I think you will, then I want you to take over the Rocking Sea Ranch.
Oh, but Smoke, I can't.
Yes, you can, Joey. Remember, you've got lots of partners, and we're all counting on you to make this the best ranch in Central Colorado. Oh, and I almost forgot.
Smoke reached behind him and placed the leather valise Murdoch had been carrying on the table in front of Joey.
Here's a little something from Murdoch to pay you back for all the pain and trouble he caused you and your family.
Joey opened the valise, and he and Betty glanced in.
Oh, there must be $1 million in there.
More like 20,000. It should be enough to buy the Lazy M and his stock from the bank and combine the two ranches into one big enough to make some real money for all the men and the families of the men who helped us defeat Murdoch.
Unless, of course, you'd rather play a little poker with those greenbacks. I'm a little rusty, but if you'll remind me how to play, we could start a game.
Betty reached over and grabbed that valise.
Oh, no, you don't, Mr. Longmont. This money's going straight to the bank, and then it's going to be put to use to help all our new friends at our Colorado home.
Joey raised his eyebrows and grinned.
Looks like we have some new neighbors, Smoke.
So it does.
Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man, 20, Honor of the Mountain Man, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2001, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, James Lewis, Michael Glenn, Christopher Sheeran, Tim Getman, Jeff Allen, Richard Rowan, Thomas Penn, Drew Copas, Tim Carlin, Terrence Aselford, Michael John Casey, Stephen Carpenter, Ken Jackson, Danny Gavigan, Eric Messner, Elizabeth Jernigan, Joe Brack, Karen Carbone, Johann Detweiler, James Konacek, and Nathaniel Perry. Additional Boot Hill Boys by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Rose Elizabeth Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beaton. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Dwayne Beeman and Johann Detweiler. Graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Additional music by Johann Detweiler and Brian Patton. Smoke Jensen theme by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Honor of the Mountain Man, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, The Last Mountain Man, Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, Eagles, and Sidewinders series, as well as Elmer Kelton's Texas Rangers series. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other titles and graphic audio. We appreciate it.
Available now in graphic audio.
Am I dead? Is this it? Am I dead?
Go back.
Elbryon?
Go back.
Elbryon. Oh. Oh, my love. I'm so weary.
You cannot be here. Not now. You cannot forsake our son when his hour of need approaches.
Elbryon, do not chase me away. Adrian is beyond me. Beyond all the world.
Go back!
It's
St. Mirabel has never fallen. Not to any enemy. Not to the great Powry fleet that attacked us in the time of the demon. Not to the goblin hordes that descended upon the civilized lands. Not to the errant judgments of Father Abbot Delibert Marquardt. Not to the plague in all its incarnations. Our walls are strong, but not nearly as strong as the faith that truly holds us firm.
Fine words, brother. We will speak them together and loudly for all to hear.
And King Adrian comes knocking.
Dragon, the second oldest of the races and the most vile by far.
You knew that Bryn Dariel was rumored to possess such a beast.
So?
So explain your reaction.
I cannot explain. The revulsion within me, I had not anticipated.
Were you not joking earlier that you would desire such a beast as a mount?
I would desire its vile head as a trophy and nothing more.
We have been deceived. Duke Callus has turned.
How is this possible? Why did your scouts not detect?
Adrian and his gemstones.
We cannot fight them all.
Whose turn now? St. Mirabel is doomed.
St. Mirabel is doomed in any case.
We have nowhere to run.
Then let us fight. And so it ends.
Don't miss the final confrontation between good and evil. The conclusion of The Demon War Saga, Book 7, Immortalis, Part 3. Available now in graphic audio.
Graphic Audio presents E.E. Knights, Vampire Earth.
Hi there. I'm supposed to see Lieutenant Franks. He's here, right? I got a message for him.
I don't know you, kid. Where's the message and who sent you?
It's verbal, Lieutenant. Let me think. Goes like this. You're a shit-eating, traitorous, murderous disgrace to the human race.
What?
That's about it. I'm sorry, who are you? I thought I knew everyone in camp.
I'd prefer not to be put in any official reports.
My name is David Valentine. I'm in charge of what's left of this company. I'd be obliged if you'd give me your name.
My code name is Smoke, if you have to say something.
Code name? You're a cat.
Yes, Mr. Lieutenant. Since the age of 16, are you missing about 24 men?
Some wolves under a lieutenant named Calder Giron are missing.
Don't expect them back. They got caught on the banks of the Verdigris. Slaughtered.
Pickett spotted the Grogs crossing the lake about midnight, 5 kilometers north of here.
Coming here or just trying to raid into the Ozarks?
They're after us, no doubt about that. Maybe some Kurian is down to his last reaper, thanks to you, Valentine. Give him hell, Val. Captaincies grow from days like these.
Good of them to let us know they're on the way. Let's return the favor. Stand your post, men, and let them know the wolves are waiting.
You missed a courier, Valentine. Bad news when it comes special delivery. Sorry, son. Someone you know die.
I've got orders to report to Montgomery next week. I'm subject to court-martial.
This how you always take bad news, Lieutenant?
I'm the king of bad news, lady. Ask my parents. Ask Gabby Cho. I'm King Midas and the Angel of Death all rolled into one. Whatever I touch dies.
Ah, the jovial kind of drunk. My favorite. Come on, Ghost, let's get you up. You're coming with me, Lieutenant Valentine. Can't have you doing yourself any harm. Not on my watch, anyway.
David, you've proved yourself as a wolf. To become a cat, your body will undergo some difficult changes, and there is a risk.
You use us?
Yes, we do. Do you know why? You are a unique race. The deadliest hunter in the world is a tiger. But put 5 of them together, and they still hunt no better than a single tiger. A beehive is a miracle of organization, but 3 beehives cannot cooperate. Army ants make warfare, plan campaigns, and make slaves of their captives, but do all this on group instinct, and could never work together with an ant from a different queen. That is what we found on the worlds we explored. Individual greatness or collective ability, but never both. You humans, you are tigers alone and army ants together, able to switch from one to the other with ease. You're the greatest warrior species we have ever encountered.
Brace yourself, Valentine! Stay down! Damn!
Damn them all!
What was that?
A hell of a killing!
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.